Hi everyone, welcome to Advanced Radio and our Society article for this month. And we are going to be talking about mental health and phones, iPhones in particular. You'll see that one of the words in our title is called the iGen, which means the iPhone generation. And to discuss this article with me, I have two gentlemen in the studio.
Simon.
Hello everyone, this is Josh.
And I am Linda, and we're so happy you are joining the three of us today. We are on page 40 of your magazine, so if you have it, you might want to follow along with us. And we're basically going to be looking at a study that's been done by a professor, a PhD in psychology, and she is looking at the effect of phones and the iGeneration. Simon, do you have an iPhone or a smartphone?
I do. I'm a pretty heavy user of a smartphone, actually. I use it all the time for all kinds of different things.
And what about you, Josh?
I also have a smartphone, and I would also say I'm a fairly heavy user of my smartphone, but I am not a long-time user of a smartphone. I lived in Costa Rica for many, many years, and while I was there, I did have a smartphone, but it was a very basic phone, and I pretty much just used it for communication and taking notes.
Okay, and I also have a smartphone, and I use it a lot. I also use it for work, so I guess I'm a semi-heavy user. I'm not a user like some of the people I ride the MRT with, because they never look up from their phones. But we are talking about how this use of it and the introduction of smartphones is affecting this whole generation's mental health. And we're looking actually at a study that's been published in a book and about the results of what have been found. And I think that there's some pretty shocking results or findings from this professor's study. As you just generally read the article, do you think that the iPhone or smartphones are changing society?
Yes, I think they are changing society. But I'm also wary of articles that sort of promote fear of new technologies. You know, when I was growing up, people just watched hours and hours of TV.
Mm-hmm.
And there was all kinds of media about how TV was rotting children's brains. And it was such a terrible thing. And now we've moved on to this other thing. And we long for the days of
TV.
The family sitting around the TV in the living room, right? And so I think you just have to take all of these things with a grain of salt, which means you want to think about it carefully as you read these different kinds of ideas.
Okay.
And I take that also to mean, Simon, that you believe that your brain was not rotted by too much sitcom television.
It might have been, but I'm not well positioned to, I guess, know.
Fair enough. I also remember there being a lot of concern over television. And growing up with television, I think I was probably part of the generation that saw that as something that we just did every single day. And I know that my mother screamed at me on the weekends to get away from the TV and go outside and play. But we'll see what they have to say about this and if it's really anything different.
Okay, well, let's get started with our article and see what it has to say. They are actually discussing this book, as I said before, that has been published with the results that they found of some surveys and polls that they've been doing, studies they've done on the use of smartphones and how it's affected people. So if you have your magazine, again, we're on page 40, and we're just going to read this short section in the left-hand column. And also, if you have your digital device with you, why don't you take that out now as well and follow along with us.
The Mental Health Risks for iGen. A new book reveals that kids who are constantly connected may become increasingly unhappy. Jean Twenge had never seen anything like it. The San Diego State University professor in personality psychology had been studying generational differences for 25 years since she was a 22-year-old PhD student at the University of Michigan. Her research had generated more than 120 scientific publications. In 2012, when the proportion of Americans who own smartphones surpassed 50%, she noticed abrupt changes in teen behavior and emotional states.
Okay, so we see that this book, we're going to be discussing this book and the author of the book here, Jean Twenge. She is a professor in personality psychology. That's kind of an interesting branch of psychology, isn't it? How your personality develops and the changes in one's personality, I would assume. All of the above.
Mm-hmm.
And it says here that when she's doing, well, the first sentence says she had never seen anything like it. So that is a very good lead-in sentence to an article that you want to find out what she'd never seen anything like. And it says that she's been studying generational differences for 25 years. So it sounds like she knows a lot about generations and the differences among the various generations over 25 years. She's been doing this since she was a 22-year-old PhD student at the University of Michigan. And notice that they are trying to establish her relevance here. It says her research had generated more than 120 scientific publications. That's pretty impressive, I would say. What do you guys think?
Well, at least that it was interesting enough in the academic field, the field of personality psychology, that it's really generated a lot of other work. So a lot of other people doing a research along the same lines or using her information to make their own conclusions. So that does really sort of argue that she's pretty relevant.
That's a popular topic, too, because she's looking at generational differences. And so that's the sort of topic that never gets old. People are always, you know, looking for ways to relate to other generations and understand other generations and stuff.
Right, the old understanding the young and vice versa.
Well, before we go any further, we notice that this is called the iGen generation. And let's take a look. We have kind of an extra bit of information here at the bottom of page 40. So I think it would be good for us to define what she's referring to when she's talking about iGen here. So, Simon, do you want to maybe we should just read this little section?
Sure. Defining iGen. Twenge seeks to add to the current generational demarcations of boomers, Gen Xers, and millennials with the iGen, those who were born between 1995 and 2012. What she calls the iGen have never known a world without smartphones. Yes, millennials were raised with internet access, but not constant connectivity. I settled on 95 because 1995 just happens to be the year the internet was commercialized. So iGen are the ones who have never known a world without the internet. The devices they hold in their hands have both extended their childhoods and isolated them from true human interaction, she writes.
Okay, great. So thank you, Simon. So we're going to look and see that actually she wants to separate the generations. That's the demarcations. And that is how you put markers in between generations. And she wants to do that with the boomers, the Gen Xers, the millennials, and the iGen. And I think it's kind of interesting. So that means that if you were born in 1995, you're 23 now, okay, down to 2012, okay, so that means you would be six. That's kind of a large generational gap there. But it does make sense, right? Why is she calling them an iGen? Because this is the world that they were born into, full of smartphones, and they've never not known the internet.
Right. So I think a lot of our listeners are probably used to the terms baby boomers and millennials, maybe not so much Generation Xers, because it tends to be the forgotten generation. That's why they call it Generation X. So that is just the generation that kind of came after the baby boom. And there was kind of a decline in the birth rate there. So there's not as many Generation Xers. But
are you a Generation Xer?
I am actually
a millennial.
I'm right on the line.
We're right on the line.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to admit I'm a baby boomer. I'm not on the line.
The thing that was interesting here about this little blurb here is they talk about how iGen is a term that she wants to add, so a new definition. But that she talks about these kids being born in 1995, which is slightly ahead of really when the smartphones became popular, because they didn't really become popular until after 2000. But at the same time, these are people who and growing up would have always had smartphones around at the time when they really start interacting with them.
Mm-hmm. And it doesn't tell you for sure, but I would have guessed that the I stands for internet after reading this definition.
Probably.
Because that's really what she sort of focuses on, right? That they've never known a world without this commercialized internet.
Exactly.
Right. When I first saw the title, I thought it had to do with the iPhone, but actually, I agree. I think it has to do with the internet. But, and then she goes on to say that, it's so interesting that they have these phones have made their childhoods longer, but isolated them from interaction with other human beings. And that part, that part is not surprising, I don't think. So let's see what's really going on. So in 2012 is when the proportion of Americans surpassed 50%. And if you are going to surpass something, what are you going to do, Simon?
Well, yeah, and again, this is back in the main reading, so in the second paragraph here. Basically, when you surpass, it means you move past or you go beyond. So when we say the number of people who are using smartphones or owning smartphones surpassed 50%, it means more than half of people had smartphones.
And what did she really notice? I thought this was so interesting. Even in 2012, she noticed that there was abrupt changes in teen behavior and emotional states. And if something is abrupt, it just means immediate, kind of without any warning, right?
Yeah, almost shocking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it happened like, instantly, it seems like.
Right. And this, I think, is what they're talking about at the very beginning of that lead-in, that thing that she had never seen anything like.
Right. So there you have it. That's kind of the answer to what that, as you said, that very first sentence said again. Okay, well, let's go on to the second column here, and we're going to read the whole right-hand column now, so why don't you follow along with us?
Connectivity and the mental health link. In these big national surveys of teens that I keep an eye on, there started to be some pretty sudden changes in the ways teens use their time and how they said they were feeling in their mental health, she said. Among other things, teens are not hanging out as much with friends, in no rush to drive, dating less, and getting less sleep. Most alarming, despite their continual connectivity, they are lonely, and rates of teen depression and suicide have skyrocketed since 2011. On these big surveys, there are six questions that asked about loneliness, including, how often do you feel lonely? And how often do you feel left out? And the responses show that same pattern of mental health not having done much, or even gotten a little bit better until 2007, she said. Then they start to tick up, and in 2012, those feelings of loneliness and feeling left out shoot upward. And that, of course, is maybe due to social media, where teens can see everything that their friends are doing that they didn't get invited to. The results of Twenge's deep dive into multi-generational data of more than 11 million individuals, cutting across income, racial, and regional boundaries, is her new book, iGen, Why Today's Super-Connected Kids Are Growing Up Less Rebellious, More Tolerant, Less Happy, and completely unprepared for adulthood, and what that means for the rest of us.
So this word connectivity actually has taken on kind of a life of its own or a new meaning from what it originally meant. Is that right, Josh?
Well, so back in the day when things were connected by cables and it was difficult to get certain items to talk to each other, then you can have connectivity issues, meaning that maybe your PC wouldn't talk to your printer or the dreaded scanner or anything else. And that's still what it continues on today. But now things are networked and they're wireless, and it's pretty easy because we have a lot of plug-and-play things. So usually people don't talk so much about connectivity issues, about networking, computer things together, but they do talk about it in a different way, which means being connected to each other on the internet.
Okay. And Simon, you were saying that that also meant here, it just means you're always connected to the internet.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the the underlying theme of mm-hmm. this article is that this I generation is defined by being always online because they've only known a world where everything is online. So I guess if you're looking at this subtitle, you would basically say being online and the mental health link or
right.
consequences of being online all the time.
Okay, so it means that there's a connection between the two of these. And that's actually what this whole book is about. She took big national surveys, so we know that the group that she was surveying is legitimate for the study. It says that she keeps an eye on a lot of them, and then she noticed that there were pretty sudden changes or abrupt changes to the way that teenagers spend their time and how they were feeling in their mental health. I think that's a pretty strong statement. I mean, she's making a direct correlation here, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. So, first of all, she's looking at a very big group of people, so it's not just a tiny small sample or study. She's talking about a national survey and basically seeing a big change in the answers that you get in this national survey. Mm-hmm. So it's the kind of survey that people do over and over again, the same kinds of questions over different years.
Right. And she said one of the things that she noticed, among other things, so she noticed some other things as well, but she also noticed that teens are not hanging out as much with friends. They are in no rush to drive. They're dating less and getting less sleep. So these are four kind of major things that we associate with teenage years that have a direct effect on their mental health. First of all, we have this vocab word here, to hang out. And did you hang out a lot with your friends when you were teenagers, guys?
As much as I could, I suppose.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I mean, I was book-oriented when I was a teenager, so I spent a lot of time reading, but I also spent a lot of time hanging out with other people who enjoyed books and, well, sometimes we would say nerding out, right? So we would talk about the books, but I would spend a lot of time hanging out with my friends as a teenager.
So I guess if you wanted to do a quick definition of hanging out, you might say spending time with, but without a clear purpose. So, for example, you're not getting together to work on a school project. You're just kind of getting together.
Mm-hmm. With no defined activity, yeah, just being together. So they notice that teens are not doing this as much, and they're in no rush to drive. I think that for American culture, especially, you know, large city culture is a little bit different. I know some of my friends' kids are learning to drive now, and when I think of New York City, I don't think it's quite as important. But in most cities, and definitely in the country, there is a huge rush to drive.
Well, yeah, and if you think back to the sidebar we just read, it mentioned that the cell phone use was extending young people's childhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's very closely tied to this idea of driving, because North America is actually physically laid out so that you can't get anywhere unless you can drive. Public transportation tends to be very poor. And so if you can't drive, you basically need someone to drive you around.
Right.
And that, in this case, would usually be people's parents. And so, traditionally, being old enough to drive and having a driver's license was like a big transition point where people became a lot more independent and sort of, I guess, a first big step into adulthood in a lot of ways.
Or independence. And, yeah, I think where I'm from, people, almost everybody started driving and getting their licenses at around 16. And if you lived on a farm, you know, I was driving a truck on the farm people started driving like at 13, 14, and 15. So, I mean, it's a big, as Simon said, it's hugely important.
Mm-hmm. And you'll notice that it also connects to the next thing on the list. If you've ever seen American movies, you will know that driving is an important part of dating.
Especially in smaller towns.
Yeah. And so, all of these things are probably kind of tied together. Being less independent, less mobile, mm-hmm. Affects a lot of traditional parts of life.
And I think the last one is very telling. It says getting less sleep. And that means that they're getting less sleep because they're spending time on their phones all the time. They take their phones to bed with them. What about you, Josh? When did you get your license?
Well, I lived in an area, it was not a large town by any stretch of the imagination, but it did have a little bit of a public transportation system, but My birthday, my 16th birthday, was in the end of January, and I lived in an area where there was a lot of hills and a lot of snow. And despite the fact that the day before it dumped about a foot of snow on the ground, I took my driver's test on my birthday, the first day that I possibly could to get my driver's license, because it was that big of a deal.
I did too. Took it on my birthday.
And I think you guys are very, very common.
That was especially for everyone that I remember getting their driver's license on the day of their 16th birthday was pretty common.
Yes, and I also notice from my friends that are younger than me that have kids that are now getting their driver's licenses, they're all so happy because that means that they don't have to drive their kids around to every event that they're in.
Well, my parents were ecstatic. I was a swimmer, and the only pool that we had access to, we could only get in it early in the morning, so I had to go to my swim practice at 5 a.m., and so my parents were very happy not to have to drive me to swim practice every morning.
But we see here that things have changed. She noticed that these trends, and most alarming, despite their continual connectivity, that means that they, you know, are always connected to one another, they're lonely. And the rates of depression among teenagers and also suicide have skyrocketed since 2011. If we look at this word skyrocketed, you know, it's very easy to kind of figure out what it means. If something skyrockets, it means that it just goes up very, very quickly, and it makes extreme quick progress towards success. But here it's not success, actually. It's to disaster in people's lives, it looks like.
Yeah, and this idea of being lonely, I mean, it's a big theme from this point on in the article.
Mm-hmm.
But it was very surprising to me because my experience as not a member of the I generation was completely the opposite. So I feel much more connected to people I know because of connectivity. You know, because you can keep track of people that you haven't maybe seen for years and, you know, participate in each other's lives.
Yeah, I feel that way too. I mean, I connect to a lot of friends like from high school and, you know, from my early 20s that I'd lost contact with for many, many, many years. However, here, I think if we look at why they feel lonely, it's very, very telling. So it says that they have 6 questions on this survey about loneliness. How often do you feel lonely? And how often do you feel left out? And that, to me, was the key question that they're asking. How often do you feel left out? And the responses showed that the same pattern of mental health, not having done much or even gotten a little better since 2007, then they started to tick up. And in 2012, those feelings of loneliness and feeling left out shoot upward or skyrocket. And she thinks that's because of social media, because you can see everything that your friends are doing and you can see what you're not invited to. Actually, I even saw somebody post on Facebook. One of our all mutual friends had a party, and this person wrote, "Oh, and I wasn't invited to this." And I mean, this is an adult responding to something that she'd seen. So if you're a vulnerable teenager, you can imagine how they feel. Do you not think that this has some effect on kids?
Yeah, sure. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I definitely do too. I think part of maybe, you know, one of the things about generational differences or generational divides is that, you know, it can be a little difficult for different generations to really understand or kind of put themselves in the place of the following generation. I think for us, you know, growing up at a time where, like, I had very close friendships when I was in high school, but it was very difficult to maintain that contact until social media came around years later. And now it's sort of a very enjoyable way in order to kind of get a sense of what my old high school friends are doing. And I know that's very important for a lot of people. But I can imagine that it creates a different dynamic when you're in high school and doing these things on social media. I mean, I remember being left out of all sorts of stuff when I was in high school. But I never really had anything that was kind of what we call rubbing my face in it, so making it super obvious that I was not invited to certain things. I mean, if somebody had a party that I was invited to, I would only hear about it days later because people were talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
It is a very different sort of relationship, too, so you can sort of see that.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Right, being connected only on social media, like you meet someone somewhere, at, you know, some sort of school event, and then you're all connected to each other. It's very different than sort of being connected to a group of old friends who you have shared experiences
right.
with over a long period of time. Right?
That's very true.
it also made me wonder how deep these friendships were, you know, because you're connected to so many people. As you were saying, you can just meet somebody and you're immediately connected to them. And you're also taken into their social life, but you're on the edge of it because you're just social media friends.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Well, we see there that the result of her deep dive into multi-generational data of more than 11 million individuals, and this is the point I wanted to make with this, is that this is, you know, that is a lot of information coming from across the board. So it is very, very legitimate information. You can trust it because it's not like three people answering. And notice that it goes across income barriers, racial barriers, and regional barriers. So this is across the country in the United States. It's not just the Midwest or the Pacific Northwest or the South or anything. It's across all regional barriers. And then she has a new book that we're going to be talking about tomorrow, which we've been relating to. So why today's super connected kids are growing up less rebellious, more tolerant, less happy. So now we're coming to kind of a negative feeling and completely unprepared for adulthood and what that means for the rest of us. So come back again tomorrow and we will finish our discussion on the mental health risks for the I generation. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.